Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Oh, boy, do we have a full show for you tonight and lots of good topics. I hope you'll sit with us here through the whole thing. I don't know if co-host Dave will be joining us or not tonight. I know he's got some personal stuff he's been dealing with. Nothing, you know, horrible, just busy. So if he joins us, so be it. And, of course, you can join us at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. Please hold your calls until the bottom of the hour when I get through the opening part of the show and we can talk about whatever is going on. But to start every show, or to start this show like we do every show, we start with the random political rhetoric generator. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, I refuse to support an America where ExxonMobil executives and corrupt labor unions can destroy our founding fathers' dreams. Ah, the political generator. Always a good time. This week's spurious correlation, which we do now, have been for some time, to show that causation and correlation are two entirely different things. Just because something appears to correlate doesn't mean it causes it. This week's spurious correlation is that the money spent on pets throughout the United States correlates very strongly with the number of lawyers in California. Over a 10-year period of 2000 to 2009, that's an almost identical line, and that's pretty entertaining. So obviously the amount of money people are spending on pets has nothing to do with how many lawyers there are in California, but they correlate. And that's why we point out that correlation and causation are two different things. All right. To start the show tonight, I found an interesting story. It's the name of the headline was, "Does Your County Have an MRAP?" It's like, well, what's an MRAP? And the picture has a very obviously a military vehicle. An MRAP is a mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicle. Mine-resistant, like, you know, landmine. Mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicle. Now, the military's been handing them out to police forces as we've seen for some time now. Our police forces have been getting more and more military-grade equipment. Why? Because, well, it's free, or so they say. And I don't really foresee a need to be able to, I'm not real worried about landmines on my day-to-day journeys. But apparently Kenton County, up here in northern Kentucky, and then Henderson County and McCracken County out in the western part of the state all feel that it is necessary to have a vehicle that could withstand a mine, a landmine. Why? Just why? And you hear people, well, you know, we have all this surplus equipment. This is just surplus equipment that's getting shipped out to local police forces. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's being done as we get out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, okay. Because, you know, the Middle East is all better now. We certainly could never end up in another dang war, which I hope we don't. But certainly, you know, things are all better over there now. So obviously we have all this surplus equipment we'll never have a use for again. And people like to point to that shootout robbery that happened. Boy, it's been almost, I think, 15 years ago. Maybe more, maybe a little less. I don't remember. It's been a long time ago. The guys who were all wrapped in multiple layers of body armor and robbed a bank and had automatic weapons and all that stuff. They point to that as the reason why all the police forces across the United States need to have military-grade weaponry. I think that's kind of silly. The reality is we have a police force, a civilian police force, that is looking more and more like the military every day. Meanwhile, we have a military force that is being used more and more often as a police force internationally every day. I think it's kind of interesting that basically the police and military roles are getting melded together, that the police are becoming more military and the military is becoming more police. And I have to ask the question, when does the line get crossed? When is it that we have a police force that really is the military and we have a standing army patrolling our streets? Have we reached that point? Perhaps in some areas we have, certainly not everywhere. But I have to ask the question, and I mean this quite seriously, when is the line, where's the line? Who decides where the line is? I don't know. I don't know. It worries me. That's all. I think that we're heading down, and we continue to head down a very dark path when it comes to the militarization of our police forces. And certainly, I don't mind the police keeping up with technology. I don't expect our police to be patrolling the streets on horseback with flintlocks, although some cities do the horseback thing, whatever. I don't expect it that they are infinitely trapped in time. But at the same time, I don't really ever see the need for our police forces to have armored personnel carriers with 50 caliber machine guns attached. I just don't see the need. And we're going to touch on this again a little later in the show, but I just thought that was an interesting way to start. Does your county have an MRAP? And three of Kentucky's counties do. So I guess the citizens of Kenton, Henderson, and McCracken County can feel safe that if anyone ever does plant a landmine, the police can run their vehicle over it. Whatever. I don't know. I see there's a lot of change happening. There's a lot of, you know, it's interesting. Obama campaigned on the whole hope and change thing. And I think at this point, everyone's over the hope part of it, right? I don't see anybody going, ooh, I'm still very hopeful that Obama's presidency is going to be wildly successful now that we're 6 years in. But there is a lot of change, that's for sure. A lot of change. Before I dig into that too deep, did you everybody see the story about Rick Perry now being indicted by a grand jury for dereliction of duty or something to that effect? Basically, the story revolves around Rick Perry refusing to fund an arm of the judicial branch that's being run by someone who got a DUI and acted like an idiot. And essentially he's saying, look, I'm not going to fund that person. And he said, I will fund it if that person steps down. Now, I don't exactly know how that works. It's a separation of powers issue. But basically the legislature put the funding in. He, I guess, line item vetoed that particular item. And the grand jury is now saying that he's violating the state constitution by not funding it. Now, I don't know if their state constitution requires the funding or not. I just don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch that unfold. But what is interesting, if you haven't seen the video of the woman in question, it's fairly damning. She's obviously a little tipsy. Now, she claims that she only had a couple of glasses of wine and then went home. And they pulled her over for no reason, supposedly. And it's interesting because I wonder how many times the police actually hear this story of someone who is actually, you know, intoxicated, and they say the same thing. You know, I've only had a couple of drinks. I was fine. You didn't even stop me. You stopped me for no reason, and blah, blah, blah. Apparently in this situation, someone had actually called it in. And the video is pretty telling. You know, the woman in particular, she's very worried about her judicial career, her career as a appointed or elected official. I guess it's elected. I think judges are elected in Texas. In fact, I know they are. So that's her main concern. You're ruining my career. Well, wait a second, career? Career? In electoral politics? It's kind of interesting. And that's her main concern, at least in the video. And I understand the video has been edited down significantly. I'm sure that the video was quite long. So there may be more to the story than what's being presented. I hate having the filtered news source. I'd rather see the full thing, including the, you know, dash cam video and everything else. But what struck me was her concern about her career being ruined. Hey, you know, oh, I didn't realize I was drunk, and I certainly didn't mean anything by it. You know, hey, I didn't know. Certainly not a, you know, apology. Certainly not anything other than, you're ruining my career. You're ruining my political chances. Really? That's your concern? Okay. And I don't think it's just this woman. I think it's the majority, not all, but the majority, and probably the overwhelming majority of politicians today are looking at a career in politics. Look at the people around you, elected from your area, your district. How many of those people have been elected for a really long time? Maybe a decade or two. Or if you're a U.S. senator, how about 3 decades? It's interesting to me because it's not what our founding fathers intended. George Washington was adamant that no one should be president for more than 8 years. There was nothing that at the time required him to step down from the presidency. He did so because he thought it was the right thing to do. It's interesting because there are very few politicians that do things because they're the right thing to do. Most of our politicians are simply interested in getting reelected. Every once in a while, it turns out to be something that was good, that they do something good in order to get reelected. Perhaps a great example, the stories are coming now, preparing for the first industrial hemp harvest here in Kentucky in who knows how many years, decades, many decades. You know, rightfully so, I will give the credit that Mitch McConnell had the hemp, industrial hemp research written into the farm bill this year so that Kentucky could plant its first industrial hemp in decades. Now, it's limited. It's not a perfect bill, but it's a step in the right direction and one that generally most people agree is a step in the right direction. But certainly, the hemp issue has been around for a very long time. David Galbraith talked about it for how many decades? And it's not like this is a new issue, but it is one that's hit a critical mass in popularity. And that's what worries me. Is it that we have to wait for everything to be popular? Do we have to educate the public on every little thing in order to be allowed to do it? Is it – I just find it interesting because politicians tend to do funny things in election years. They don't they don't do a whole lot unless they're planning on running for re-election or looking for some other benefit. It's not about what's in it for the people. It's about what's in it for them. And as an individualist, as one who believes in the power of the individual, I have no problem with looking out for number one. However, the job of a representative within a representative republic is to represent the people. And so I do have a problem with people who are individualists in a job where they're supposed to be representing more than just their own self-interest. It's interesting because you can apply this to so many politicians. There are only a few exceptions of which I am aware. I can probably count on two hands the number of politicians that I know that aren't in it for them. They lose, then, you know, if they lose because they stood up for what they believe is right, then so be it. They don't care. How many politicians do you know that say, hey, I'm going to do what's right, and if the people don't like that, they can always send me home, but I'm always going to do what's right so I can look at myself in the mirror and I can sleep at night? How many politicians have you heard say that? Not many. And it's showing. This is the thing. It's amazing to me. More and more people realize that things are bad. More and more people realize they're getting played. They're getting straight up played by the system. I think I mentioned last week the 53% of likely voters, not just full, but likely voters, believe that Democrats and Republicans as parties don't represent Americans, that neither one does. And that's fairly significant, that over 50% of the voting, the people who are going to vote or are very likely to vote, don't like the Democrats and Republicans as parties. That's awfully strange. How is it that these people keep getting elected then? How is it that though the public dislikes 53% by 53% dislike the Democratic and Republican parties, why do they keep sending politicians from those parties to elected offices, whether it's here in Frankfurt or in D.C.? It's amazing to me. You look at the disapproval rating of Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's job performance rating is 54% negative. His positives are only in the 30s. I can't remember the number offhand. I didn't write it down here. But over half of people disapprove of Mitch McConnell's job performance. Yet, in the last two polls that have come out, he's leading. He's leading the race for United States Senate, even though over half the public doesn't like him. What? That's accomplished by the lesser of two evils game. You know, it's interesting, and I think everyone here listening probably knows my involvement in the Libertarian Party, and that by now they should know we have a candidate in the United States Senate race. They just entered just over a week ago or just under a week ago or somewhere in there. It's been a crazy month. I don't even get me started. I don't know what day it is. But it's amazing because Democrats are attacking the Libertarian candidate, saying that he's a plant from the McConnell campaign sent to split the anti-McConnell vote. The McConnell and the Republicans, the McConnell camp Republicans, are claiming that Patterson is being put in the race by Democrats, brought in to split the conservative vote. The reality is he wasn't put in by either one. He isn't being supported by either one. Heck, I know where all the money came from. Let me tell you a secret. It wasn't Democrats and Republicans. It's amazing to me because people get caught in this lesser of two evils trap. And until people are willing to get out of that trap, to break free of those bonds, those chains that hold people holding their nose election after election, until people are willing to say no more and do something that has a metric to it, whether that's run for office themselves, preferably if not a Democrat or Republican, or vote differently, until you're doing something different, you're going to keep getting the same results. I mean, that's just how that works. You know, the old thing about the definition of insanity. It's pretty funny. I mentioned the McConnell and Grimes and Patterson race, this U.S. Senate race. The Republicans have been on the attack hardcore the past few days because of the public policy polling poll that shows that McConnell only has a 4-point lead in the race because David Patterson is in it, and he takes it from a 5-point race down to a 4-point race. Well, whatever. First of all, please. There's like a 3-point-something% margin of error, so whatever. You can toss the 1% of anything out the window when there's a 3% margin of error. But the funny thing is, if you do the math on it all, if you play the numbers as if they're legit and to the decimal point accurate, which they're not and whatever, but if you play that game, if you're really worried about that 1%, if you do the math, the 1% isn't even 1%. It's less than 1%. It's less than 0.75%. So when you talk about 7% of the vote going to the Libertarian candidate, and that somehow changing the outcome when the Republican has somewhere between a 2- and 5-point lead anyway, it's really just silliness. You're talking about having a 4.3% lead instead of a 5% lead. Oh no, he's only going to win by 4.5%? That's horrible. What a freaking travesty. Folks, it's a winner-takes-all thing. It doesn't matter. If you win by one vote, you'll win the whole thing. It's not like we send the Democrat half the year and the Republican half the year based on the percentages of what they got in the vote. Silliness. Although that would be an interesting, boy, that would be an interesting system. Based on the results, the candidate is sent for X percent of time. Boy, that'd be an interesting thing. Anyway, to think about that more. But the point is that the old left versus right is going away. Yeah, there's still plenty of useful idiots. The people who go to the polls and go, boy, you know, I really think Mitch McConnell's a slime ball, but I'm going to pull the lever for Mitch McConnell anyway because at least he's not Allison Grimes. We have to stop Obama, Reid, Pelosi, blah, 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 blah. We're the ones that say, well, you know, I'm not a big fan of Allison Grimes. You know, I want that Mitch McConnell guy gone, and that's the only way to get it done. And, well, I'm going to pull the lever just as an anti-Mitch vote, blah, 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 blah. We need more independent candidates. We need more independent voices. We need more people who are willing to stand up and say no more. And those numbers are growing. The number of people who are willing to stand up and say no more are growing. Those people are getting there. We gain more and more, and this is not a new trend, but it has accelerated significantly in the past few years. The old alliances are breaking down. New alliances are forming. One of the interesting stories on Reason Magazine's website this week is about the left, the quote-unquote left, and libertarians forming the, quote, unholy alliance, unquote, to push policy. And where the left and libertarians somewhat overlap, depending on who you're talking to, civil liberties, obviously, were, hey, I think America in general is getting real sick of this police state garbage. I think these growing militarized police forces are creating more civil libertarians every day. And also on the wars. Everything we've done in the Middle East in the last two decades has only made things worse. Yeah, they haven't hit us here again. I'll grant you that. But everything else is a freaking disaster. Iraq's being taken over by radicals. Israel and the Palestinians, Hamas, whoever, are attacking each other. Meanwhile, you got Russia invading parts of Ukraine, basically. And I think that's a play because I think they see the Middle East as melting down and they want to make sure they have access to Ukrainian oil. I think that's what that's all about. And it's funny because this breakdown is why the Republican Party, I believe, why the Republican Party is trying to purge the elected libertarians, the ones who are small L libertarians, who are Republicans, big R Republicans, small L libertarians, that have been elected. They're trying to push those people out. They're trying very, very hard. They plow lots of money into that. And libertarians who are decried for being the apologists of big business are ironically being attacked by the chambers of commerce, or as I call them, chambers of communists around the country. Why? Because libertarians are principled. They don't believe in cronyism. They don't believe that anyone should have special rights. No one should be given a government benefit that puts them above other people. It's not right. And I'll tell you, the majority of Americans, if you ask them, hey, do you think it's a good idea that the government picks and chooses and gives special perks to certain people? I'm going to guess that the majority of Americans say no, that's a really bad idea. Now, some Americans, I would say still many, won't be savvy enough to turn down those benefits if specific to them. Well, if we give you an extra $10,000 a year, would you turn that down? Well, no, they wouldn't. Not thinking through what long-term policy ramifications of that would be, but if you ask the generic question of, do you think government should be able to give special perks to different types of people based on any criteria they so choose, I would say that the majority, the overwhelming majority of Americans would say no, government should not do that. So the Chamber of Commerce, Chamber of Communists, plowed all kinds of money into trying to defeat Justin Amash up in Michigan. They ran a terrible, terrible smear campaign, ugly, ugly smear campaign against Justin Amash. And Justin Amash survived. And I, you know, usually it's considered good class or in good taste to, you know, take the call from the loser and accept their, concession of the race and blah, blah, blah. Amash would have nothing of it because he was attacked personally. People who are politicians expect the lies. They expect to be defamed, and they don't care. But real people don't like it when you tell lies about them. I had someone here just recently telling outright lies about me online. And I just called him out and said, what are you talking about? You're nuts. Here's this, this, and this. You don't know what you're talking about. And, of course, they never replied. Real people don't just let that stuff roll off. If somebody called your mom an alcoholic abuser, or alcoholic heroin abuser, and your mom wasn't an alcoholic heroin abuser, you'd be pretty upset about that, wouldn't you? Even if she was, you'd probably still be upset. But especially if she wasn't, you'd be upset about that, right? Of course you would. If somebody said you beat your kids, you'd be pretty upset about that, wouldn't you? Of course you would. And that's kind of the changing face of politics. The Republican establishment especially has gone back to just lie. Just lie, 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 spin, 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 lie, lie, lie. We saw that in the primaries, where certain establishment candidates just lied their way through. And unfortunately, many of the quote-unquote good guys were not savvy enough to deal with it, weren't savvy enough to realize what was going on. And a lot of the quote-unquote good guys did not win. On the Democratic side, it's not as pronounced. They tend to get along a little better, a lot more horse trading going on there. But still, it's very interesting to me, this new phenomenon of going to just straight outright lying, things that are easily. And it's up to us, the voters, to hold those people accountable. You know, here in Northern Kentucky, they try to get somebody to run against Justin Amash, or not Justin Amash, excuse me, Thomas Massey. And that failed, but it was the same type of people, right? It's those chamber communist types that try to get somebody to run against Thomas Massey. And the reality is Massey would have kicked their butt too, but still, for being the supposed poster children for big business apologists, libertarians apparently get kicked by those folks a lot harder than most people think. I'm over the half hour. Folks, if you'd like to call in after the break, feel free to do so. I've got other stories to talk about too. So the number here, area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. We'll be back here in just a few moments.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Desire. costing the damage.
So what's on anyone?
Go off the deep end, the distance ignored. Piss off the passenger. Answer the wrong door and pick up the phone. No answers left when you're dead. Fly through the fast lane. Run from the kid. Lost in the damage.
So what's on anyone?
Fly through the fast lane. Run from the kill.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters radio network. I had just a little bit to mention or finish up with the topic of big business and all that stuff and whatnot. You know, there's a real cost to all of this. There's a real cost. You know, a lot of times big businesses create regulations in order to keep the little guys out, ostensibly to help people, help the average person avoid this or that or whatever. But the reality is that they're doing so because it creates a barrier to entry. It's an economic term that basically means it makes it so that new competition can't get into the marketplace, thus protecting their business from the market forces of competition, which in the long run leads to lower quality and higher prices, one thing. But what also the hidden cost of all these regulations, I bumped into an interesting story about how much do regulations really cost the American economy. And in 2011, our GDP was about $15.1 trillion, I think it said. And the potential GDP, were it not for regulation, was $53.9 trillion. That's about a 4.5 times multiple of what we really had. And that's fairly significant, folks. I mean, wow. Wow. That would certainly take care of the unemployment problem. You know, there's lots of small businesses out there. I know a lot of small business owners. There are a lot of small businesses out there that would like to be expanding. They would like to be growing. They would like to be in a better place. But they can't grow in this business climate. A business climate where regulations at the state, local, and federal levels are continuing to grow and mount. I had this discussion with somebody about immigration here just recently, about how the real problem with immigration isn't immigration. The real problem with immigration is that what people used to do is come here and either work for someone or start their own thing or whatever, and they'd pull themselves up by the bootstraps and advance in social class through hard work and determination over the course of a generation or two. And that is harder than ever to get started. We've created the barrier to entry for entrepreneurs. All these regulations keep the little guys out. They keep new ones from starting. They keep existing ones from expanding. And that's the real reason our economy is still in the dumps. And it was funny, somebody tried to tell me, I had a quote in the paper here the other day about how we're 8 years into a recession, and so anything is politically possible, which, by the way, I stand by that statement. 8 years into a recession, anything is possible. But somebody responded with, well, Mr. Molmond has no clue because, you know, we entered the recession years ago and things are just swimmingly awesome now. Have you looked at some of the other stats besides the official unemployment number? Because that official unemployment number has been tinkered and dorked with so bad, it doesn't mean anything anymore. What I can tell you is the labor participation rate, the percentage of able-bodied, of-age Americans at work has declined and has not recovered. It looks like it might have finally bottomed out, but it's been steadily declining for the last 6, 7, 8 years. You've got things are not better. And the reason they're not better, based on what I've seen and research into other recessions and depressions, is that small businesses are being strangled. And therefore, they can't succeed. They can't hire people. And people who are unemployed can't go through all the stupid paperwork to start up a business. And instead, end up just sitting on the unemployment rolls. No matter how much they want to work, our policies prevent them from working. Looks like we have a caller that wants to speak. I'm going to bring him on now. And caller, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Clint. I'm actually calling you from Cincinnati. And I just want to agree with you about what's going on with the Great Recession and relating to jobs and small businesses, in particular small businesses of, say, 50 or fewer employees or 100 and fewer employees or really all the way up to 200 and fewer employees. It's really hard to put people back to work when you've had all this excess regulation that's been put in from the federal government since January of 2009.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly the point. I talk to small business owners all the time, and they see that money's cheap right now. And even if they try to go out and try to get a loan, the banks aren't lending. Even if you can get a loan or could get a loan, the regulatory scheme keeps changing. And it's got business owners freaked out. Do I want to invest deeper into this business? And understand that the mindset of a small business owner is they're building that business to eventually sell and retire on. That's their retirement plan, is to build their business and then sell it. So do you want to invest even more and create even more risk to your long-term financial health in this environment? And the answer to, I mean, almost universally to the business owners or from the business owners I speak to is no, I'm not willing to invest anymore right now. Maybe things will settle down. I'd love to be getting more. I'd love to be growing more, but I can't do it.
Right. I went to a mall up here in Cincinnati, and it's returned to 2007 levels, but look at how much rent they have to pay. Look at how much, for example, if somebody wants to work more than 29 hours, they're not going to be able to, even at a very popular Sunday afternoon and evening mall up here by Exit 12. There's not a whole lot of expanding going on. I mean, there's probably the foot traffic that they had in 2007 is back, but there's no expansion because of regulation, because of taxes, because of the Affordable Care Act, because of Dodd-Frank. And, Kentucky doesn't have a business-friendly climate either. So even if people who have money are returning to the stores and people have started to recover, which it's taken the longest it's ever taken for a recession since the Great Depression, the bottom line is there's not any new growth. What about all the people from 2007 to 2014 that entered in the workforce? We're creating jobs at the pace that was less than, and I'm not a big fan of George W. Bush, but we're creating jobs nationwide less than we did when he was president.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point. And Clint, I thank you for your call, and I'll put you back in the queue here. I got a few more things to wrap up. Thank you. You're exactly right. I mean, the economy, anybody who's paying any bit of attention, who lives in the real world, knows the economy has not improved. The numbers are saying that maybe we've hit the bottom finally, but things aren't better. We're not back to where we were before this thing started. And sure, you can pull out some statistics that say, well, look, you know, this government agency says that things are all better now. This government statistic says it's all better now. But if you get out of the politicized statistics and get into the real nuts and bolts stuff, you'll see that the number of people who are the percentage of able-bodied Americans who are in the workforce has declined, down from a height of almost 67% down to under 63%. That's a full 4% fewer people working. Now, how can we have an unemployment rate that's on par with what was before this recession started now? Well, the only way you have that is by dorking with the number, because we have 4% fewer people working, period. And sure, some of those people may decide, you know what, it's not worth going to work, or what's probably more likely is, well, if I can only go back to work and only get a part-time job and it's 4 hours a day and I got to drive back and forth and I got to pay $4 a gallon in gas, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. All right, we got just about 8 minutes left, 8.5 minutes left. I wanted to talk about the Ferguson, Missouri situation, because there's something that's not being talked about here that needs to be talked about. For those that don't know, and I don't know how you missed it, but in the news, there was a shooting of a young black male in Ferguson, Missouri, and the young black male was unarmed at the time. There's conflicting stories as to what happened. Was there a struggle? Was there a struggle for the firearm? Whatever. There's been stories that maybe he stole something from a store, that he matched the description, and maybe that's why the police questioned him. He was apparently, there's a question of whether he was stopped for jaywalking, whatever. The point is that an unarmed kid got shot. And that's bad. And then there were protests. And then there were riots. And that's bad. And then the police ramped up even further to the point where reporters were arrested. A reporter for the Washington Post and a reporter for the Huffington Post were arrested for not leaving McDonald's fast enough. And that was bad. Even worse. And then with the riots and the looting, you had business owners who rightfully, were defending their property with firearms, which is, hey, that's the right thing to do, especially in that type of situation, because the police aren't going to come. They even said that in that story of the reporters getting arrested. They said, the arresting officer or one of the officers involved said, you can call 911, but no one's going to answer. So what we have here is a series of escalations. I've talked to a number of police officers. Obviously, I know David Patterson, the Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate, very well. He was also a police officer. We had a good discussion about this today because it harkened back to a discussion we had had some time ago about how police are not trained to de-escalate a situation. And that's important because while certainly, individuals are bad actors in this scenario, there are people out trying to loot. There are people out trying to stir up a riot. There are people acting badly. There are bad actors on the ground, no doubt. The police force are supposed to be professionals. And part of being a professional is being able to rise above a particular scenario. It is being able to do better than the average person would in a particular situation. That's part of being a professional. Right? I really believe, going back to the militarization of the police, we're going the wrong direction. The militarization of the police inherently causes an escalation of the situation. If, let's say there's a demonstration going on, say it's on public property, on the sidewalk or in a park, whatever. There may be chanting, there may be whatever, but typically speaking, 90-something percent of the people, probably close to 98 or 99% of those people, are protesting with no ill intent. But the 1 to 2% bad actors certainly might try to stir something up. Some are better at being passive aggressive than others. If the police are properly trained on how to de-escalate a situation, instead of becoming a target for the mob's anger, the mob's anger can be appropriately turned toward the bad actors. If the police are there just to say, hey, we're just here to make sure nobody gets hurt, and we're here to make sure that nobody busts anything up, and that's what has happened, by the way, in Ferguson now. That's what happened when they sent the state police in. They're letting them protest now on the sidewalks, so long as they're not in the streets or on private property where they're not supposed to be, they're allowed to protest. That's been reported. That's a good thing. That's handling things professionally. And the situation is starting to de-escalate. It is in part, entertainingly, perhaps, because of the actions of the Obama administration, who have promised a full autopsy of the young kid who was killed. I say kid, he was a young man, whatever. By promising a full autopsy, a full investigation, someone from outside the immediate situation, an outside looking in objective viewpoint, is all that's needed to help de-escalate the situation. That's all that was needed. You know, we have situations like this all the time, and people grow very distrustful when an agency is investigating itself. It's like asking yourself the question, are you the best person on the planet, yes or no? There are many people who will be like, yeah, I'm the best person. But everybody else around will be like, no, that guy's a horrible scumbag. You can't trust your self-analysis, the outside, bringing the outside in investigators. The very first thing the police department should have done in the wake of that shooting was invite the FBI to come investigate. And perhaps they did. Maybe it just wasn't reported. But they should have made it very clear that they've asked for outside, unopinionated, unbiased opinions to investigate the situation. That certainly would have helped de-escalate the situation immediately. Instead of responding with SWAT teams and armored vehicles and guys dressed up with basically weapons of war, doesn't belong on our streets. So there's fault all to go around, I'm sure. And as this unfolds, we'll learn more. But the point is that the police, as the professionals, need to rise above. They need to de-escalate situations. And they can do that pretty easily. There are real easy steps to do that. And I hope that that's a takeaway out of all of this, that over the long term, we'll see more professional de-escalation rather than aggressive action. Folks, that's the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. And turn into the rest of the shows here on the My View Matters Radio Network. We're here Sunday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Until next week, I hope everybody has a good week. Take care.